So did you see Dune yet?
I have not seen Dune yet.
Have
last person in the world, Dune I yet. Think.
Oh,
I,
you know,
yeah.
Heart's made you say that.
Yeah, no, I think I'm the last person left, the one holdout.
It's good that you have that impression. Dune didn't actually do super well at the box office. I know it's the best box office performance of a movie that was released simultaneously on streaming. So something like a $40 million opening.
Okay.
But that's, you know, it's like a tiny fraction of the opening for something like No Time to Die, which got like $80 million. Or even Venom Let There Be Carnage, which disappointingly to me and other people with taste and eyeballs, was one of the most commercially successful films to be released in the pandemic era.
Wow.
Yeah, there's kind of like a, I think, kind of simplistic take in film Twitter that like, wow, Warner Brothers really patched it with this like simultaneous HBO Max release strategy that they went with for their entire slate of 2021 movies. But yeah, in reality, I think it's like it all comes down to the number of people that they're converting for HBO Max, because a single subscriber on HBO Max is worth, you know, like a dozen movie tickets.
So I have to find somebody with an HBO Max account.
They'll come crawling to me, because I'm not going to let you get out of seeing it in a movie theater. It's
my rationale.
It's the movie theater movie.
This is the truth. I'm such a big Dune fan that I really want Dune 2 to do better than Dune 1. So there needs to be some number of people for that to happen. There needs to be some number of people who only see Dune 2. So I'm going to be in that camp.
It's an interesting choice given that Dune 2 had not actually been greenlit when Dune 1 came out. So you were like indirectly contributing to the possibility that Dune 2 would never be made by not providing it any money. So
no, that's a flaw in my thinking. Okay. I've got a fun Hacker News Show HN post. In similar style to ones that we've seen before. This is called thisworddoesnotexist.com, and it's kind of like those like thispersondoesnotexist.com, which shows you a procedurally generated person that isn't real. This one is for words, and it comes complete with a definition of the word, and it's pretty fun to just keep refreshing it and see new words, and they all really feel like they could be words.
Yeah, so I was confused about this, and I didn't dig into it. It is built with GPT-2, or it's either built with GPT-2, or it's inspired, like built with a custom system that's inspired by GPT-2. Do you know the answer here?
I have not looked into the code, even though I could, because it's open source. But I think they're using GPT-2 and building on it in some way that I don't know, because I've never done that.
I'm wondering, like, does GPT generate the definition, or does it generate the word? Like, generating the definition makes more sense because the definitions consist of real words. I think in terms of generating kind of plausible sounding, not real words, that seems like something that maybe they do themselves. Just because GPT-2 is like, you know, it treats words as kind of tokens, you know, and generates all these probabilities around their usage. And it would be like surprising to me if it was able to produce words that don't exist.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe there's a way to get it at like the syllable, like to have syllables be a token, or like phonemes to be a token, but, it's probably, I mean, all of these words sound like really seem like they could be words. Every single one. None of it's just like letters that don't really work well together.
Yeah. I got perceit, anomalous. Anomalous, honestly, is basically just a word. I mean, you can attach OUS to any noun, right? I mean, I think there's a fuzzy line here.
I feel like we've had a very similar debate before.
And I won conclusively, is what I'm seeing. Kind of interesting. That's nice.
Not so sure.
Donut. Just donut with a B. This Max, there's no way GPT generated this. This is just like they've got kind of some, you know, set of rules, generative rules for like modifying existing words or applying suffixes or prefixes, or just like taking compound words and like, you know, taking the first half of one and the second half of another and mishing them together. I'm pretty sure, you know, they have a less magical, non-neural way of generating these words. And the fun part which this is, that's not to take away from this at all. The fun part is seeing what GPT comes up with. And on the token thing, I think that's maybe not quite accurate, where, you know, words are still represented, you know, with some sort of embedding, multidimensional vector embedding in GPT-3. So I guess I just want to be clear about that. Somatoterrorism. All right. That's enough of this. I do think the original one of these is This Cat Does Not Exist. And as I was Googling this, I realized that somebody else created These Cats Do Not Exist, just to try to, you know, capitalize on the people who just think it was plural the whole time. So good for them. I don't actually know which one came first. macOS Monterey came out. What's going on with that? I don't know anything about it.
I don't know anything about it either, really. Except I think the feature that I've been playing around with the most is live text, which I think is the coolest one.
That's the speech or text to speech in photos. No, not the speech.
Photo to text.
Photos to text. Yeah. Okay. OCR. Yeah. How are you using it?
Which they're, well, I mean, I don't know if you saw this tweet, which I have not come up with a use case this funny, but there's some TikTok or tweet of somebody in a classroom taking their phone out, taking a picture of somebody's notes who's sitting in front of them, and then just selecting all of the notes on their computer and pasting it into a note with OCR. And it's like such a well done, like it happens like in 3 seconds in this video, and it's like very cleanly done to make it really funny.
That's exceptional. It does remind me, I watched the MKBHD review of the Pixel 6, and he was like raving about the you know, speech to text on that, where you can basically just set it going. It goes, you know, forever as long as someone is still speaking. And, you know, you could just kind of like basically start a recording of a lecture or something if you're in class, and it'll just like entirely and like almost perfectly transcribe like the entire lecture to text, which is like, it's just an interesting example of how, like, as these kind of iterative improvements happen to the speech to text, it just unlocks totally different use cases for stuff like this. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's true. I'm excited to see a dictation comparison between an iPhone and a Pixel 6, iPhone 13 and Pixel 6, because dictation on iPhone also quite good. But
is it like arbitrary duration now?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Are you going to be a tab grouper?
You know, I never really, I tried it. I didn't really get it. I don't really know why I need it. So no, I've got Windows, and that seems like enough for me.
There's Windows, there's desktops. There's so many existing solutions for the same problem.
Yeah.
The thing that I would like, I briefly had a Chrome extension for this, where there's like this fixed set of tabs that I always want to open or like have open, that I want saved persistently, where like, if I'm just like opening up, you know, I want to close my laptop and like, you know, turn it off completely at night, but then I want to like get started the next morning. And I just want to open like Slack and Discord and Gmail and, you know, four other things. You can just like have kind of pre-built in set of tabs that I think, do they stay? Now I don't even know. Do they stay persistently? Can you like, or are they kind of ephemeral?
That's a good question. I really have no idea the inner workings of group tabs because I never tried it.
Yeah.
That's a interesting use case of just wanting, like, every time you open your computer in the morning, there's these certain things that you want to be able to quickly check.
Yeah.
In other news, I thought there were some pretty interesting Ask HNs this week, two in particular that I thought were cool, or at least somewhat thought-provoking. One is the Ask HN, is the great resignation in tech real? If so, why? And I feel like there's been so much talk over the past year about the great resignation. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating to see people in the tech world talking about it. There was also a article from The Economist that I thought had a funny headline. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's like, work from home is better for high paying jobs. Here's why. And I don't have a subscription to The Economist, so I can't read the article, but I can't imagine that it says anything that isn't incredibly obvious.
Yes. I mean, that article writes itself, I suppose.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, predictably, well, I guess the question is the Great Resignation real? Like, how did AGN land on this question?
It seems like different people went back and forth, and I guess there was no consensus, but there was a lot of discussion about, like, the why of why, in like, particular individuals are leaving their current job, and, like, just the options that people have. There's just so much more flexibility.
I'm seeing some people who are just unsatisfied with, you know, going fully remote, where you lose the camaraderie and whatnot. It does seem like the dominant use case, and maybe this is biased, not use case, the dominant kind of, like, profile here is, you know, a person feels cooped up for 18 months and wants to make a change. And usually that manifests itself as moving to a new place. But then if you're going to move to a new place, you kind of just, like, might as well switch to a new job. does anyone actually think this way? This has been like, I don't know, this is like, do you think the switching jobs is like a side effect of moving? Not a side effect, but like follows the decision to move, or vice versa? Because for me, it really does feel like people just want to go to a new place and experience novelty.
Interesting. I feel like pre-COVID, it was definitely the
opposite.
Oh, that's tricky, actually. I guess I can imagine both pretty easily. Like, somebody gets a job, but it has to be in South Bay, in the greater Cupertino area.
Which includes all of San Francisco and Berkeley. And San Jose. Yes. I have a guess as to what your second HN is going to be.
Oh, what do you think?
And I'm already mad about it. What's the best way to host a website for 500 years?
Oh, no, I do want to talk about that, but that's not the one I had came up. Wait, let's talk about that one.
I guess this technically came out the same day, like the day we recorded last week, last Friday. But I think it had gotten big by the time we recorded.
Gotcha. Yeah, I had seen that, and then I had forgotten about it. That's a great question. Like, I feel like that's a very interesting open question. I had a blog post a couple years ago that was like, can I keep a website alive for 20 years? I think was my goal. So 500 years is, that's like good luck.
Yes. That was the conclusion on Hacker News. It was like, you can't and you're dumb. Was kind of how I would summarize. The top comment was very thoughtful. It was, you know, the World Wide Web is 28 years old. We've only had computers for 76 years, and that's generous. If you go back 500 years, we were like in the age of Shakespeare or whatever, and nothing about the modern world was even close to conceivable by someone. And that we have no reason to believe that will not happen again. So, like, yeah, it's, you know, there's just no way.
That is a good point. But is the question, like, I don't have the article or the page in front of me. Is the question, what's the best way? Yeah, best way to host a website. So I feel like did this person actually give an answer of what they think the best way is?
The person who asked the question originally?
Or the top comment? Because I think it's still, I agree with them that, like, it's pretty low chance, but I do wonder, like, what the best way is right now. And I have a suggestion that I want to throw into the mix here.
Okay, well, I will say the top comment suggestion, we will get to yours in a sec, is use archival grade materials, add translations into Mandarin, Arabic, and Spanish, because, you know, to increase the readability as those languages gain ground on English in terms of usage. I don't know if that's actually true or not globally. Add some sort of, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. This suggests to add a dictionary in case words have fallen out of use. I guess maybe a thesaurus would make more sense, but adding a dictionary just seems like you might be making it even more confusing because it opens up your surface area for words to fall out of use. And then, put them like in Antarctica, like the GitHub Arctic Vault or something. So yeah, I mean, we're really stretching the definition of a website. We're just talking about creating any form of writing that will last, 500 years. And, As time has shown, having any sort of digital format of any sort is a good way to guarantee that your files will be unreadable by any system, as soon as that file extension falls out of use in, 7 years.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a pretty good answer, actually, that you gave with the translations. I don't know about the, I think I disagree about storing it in Antarctica. It seems more likely to me that like it'll just get lost there than it'll be stored there for like a useful amount. Like, I don't know, but
yeah, the original question also said, how do I host a personal page that will outlive me and be seen by my grandchildren? And unless you're planning to like finance your grandchildren's Antarctica expedition to go to the sacred text, you know, I'm not sure that's a great approach.
Yeah, well, they'll just be able to swim down there. It's a global warming joke for all the kids out there.
A+.
My suggestion is take a video. And I was thinking, is there, unless you lose the video, has there ever been a like data of a video that can like no longer be played now? I feel like we as a world do a good job at like being able to replay videos.
It's a good call. Even going back, you know, VHSs got, you know, scanned, and the DVDs get scanned to digital formats. And that's,
and you can even buy like a VHS player like today. Like you can just like get one on Amazon.
True. I guess film is like, you know, essential, like for all intents and purposes, I assume it's like film stock that is strongly coupled or has like a dependency on a particular style of projector that hasn't been manufactured since the 40s. That's basically, I don't want to say irretrievable. Like all of this, if the data still exists physically, it could be retrieved. But you know, some of the physical media, maybe, closer to being irretrievable.
That's fair. Yeah. I was just thinking if you take out the interactivity component of a website and it's just a video where it's just always exactly the same, it feels like more likely to survive a long period of time.
Yeah. Show, don't tell.
I guess so.
Did you hear, about WorldCoin? I guess it's been kicking around for a while. I only heard about it in the context of Edward Snowden shitting on it on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out, and then I saw it when it came out a second time for some reason. I don't really understand why there were two announcements about it. And then I saw Snowden, and I didn't really dive deep in any of those times.
So I would not say I dive deep. Hot take, I think WorldCoin would be pretty cool if it happened.
Okay.
It's kind of like the experiment that we were beneficiaries of, where they just kind of gave $100 of Bitcoin to like all MIT students in 2014 or 15.
Yep.
Except it's just like, make a currency and take whatever possible measures to distribute some fixed amount of it to everybody in the world in the fairest way possible, so that like, you know, you're kind of seeding the ecosystem by just like distributing, you know, this first like batch of it like across the entire globe. And the way that it works is, yeah, it uses biometrics. That's not, it uses biometrics, but in an interesting way, where they have like a physical device that's like totally like audited, like open source hardware, where it basically like scans your retina, hashes it, and then immediately deletes the scan. And then you've got these like hashes that are used as a unique identifier to ensure that the same person doesn't get like two kind of rations of WorldCoin. So yeah, I mean, Snowden addressed this in his thing. It, you know, it was just like, you know, hashes are designed to, you know, match future scans. So like a future scan by this same device that uses the same kind of hashing algorithm will produce the same hash in an ideal world. But you know, it's so tied to like that device and the algorithm it uses that it doesn't really like, that database could get leaked and it wouldn't necessarily like cause a major issue. Whereas I do think that, you know, this idea of just like this kind of universal basic income, but with a new currency that we can hopefully all use, and you like everybody just gets some for free to kind of seed the new world economy, is just ridiculous enough to be cool.
Right. Yeah,
you can unfriend me now on Facebook.
Okay, I get the appeal of WorldCoin. I don't know how to feel. I should shut up until I have more coherent thoughts. Do like new humans that like do babies get WorldCoin?
I think so. And again, it went with an eyeball. So I was confused about this. Like, someone really, what should have happened is that within 2 hours after WorldCoin was announced, somebody should have made this eye does not exist. Like, talk about the ultimate troll move. Like, we should still do that. Let's not release this episode. That's the part that confused me. But it
would be kind of fun to secretly own like 99% of all world's coins out
there. With GAN generated photos of eyeballs. My God.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. We can't release this now because this is our path to untold billions. So
absolutely. We'll edit.
Let's call it here.
Speaking of untold billions, did you see the,
boy, did I, I already know it's
the greatest trade ever made.
Oh, wow. We're talking about different billions. Oh, but not, we're going to talk about Charlie Munger. We'll get to that. Let's do yours first.
Okay. There was somebody about a year ago, I think, bought $8,000. Yeah, a year ago, bought $8,000 of Shiba Inu coin.
Oh, boy.
And that's, today, that's worth $5.7 billion.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay. Who was this?
Nobody knows who it is. You can see it in the blockchain.
Wow.
But that's, people are thinking, I mean, it almost must be the greatest trade of all time, to go from $8,000 to $5.7 billion in 400 days.
Oh my God. That's incredible. This is the person who owns that. Is that the creator? It's a rando who's like got in early.
I think I don't know. I guess nobody knows, but people aren't talking about it as if it's the owner. So I think,
you know, what's really devastating. The second sentence of the Wikipedia page for this coin is, it is suspected to be a classic pump and dump fraud scheme, yet it still has a market cap of whatever the hell it is. Truly unacceptable. God, created in August 2020, dubbing itself the Dogecoin killer. All right.
Pretty incredible.
What? Vitalik Buterin donated more than 50 trillion Shiba Inu coin to the India COVID crypto relief fund. It was already worth over a billion. Buterin owned over $1 billion of this. Oh my goodness. I don't get it. I mean, this is great. I love this. But also, oh man, I don't even know. Someone's already auto-generating new coins for like every meme of the week.
Wow. One of them will take off and you'll be worth $5.7 billion.
That's right. Undoubtedly. This is a foolproof plan.
All right. What did Charlie Munger do?
Oh boy. This is incredible. All right. So the headline here was, architect resigns in protest over UCSB mega dorm. This is like one of the top stories today. It already has 500 points and it was posted 5 hours ago. It basically, Charlie Munger is just like, again, a 97-year-old mega billionaire. And he apparently dabbles in architecture.
Yes.
So he designs
dorms.
He designs dorms. And there's already one of these dorms that's like been built and like in use at, I want to say Ann Arbor. I don't know, somewhere in Michigan, maybe. It's a grad dorm. He basically designed a similar dorm. It houses 4,500 undergraduates. 94% of the rooms do not have windows. And it kind of looks like a prison cell or like a tiny house or something. It's like there's a bed at the back of the room. The bed takes up the full width of the room. So the room is maybe 7 feet wide and like, 15 feet deep, something like that. The idea being that you just have like a desk and a bed in your room and that's it. And you compensate for that by having like comment spaces and like, really active community building or whatever. And then I think the idea is to have a kind of artificial light kind of above the bed that like is one of those like, very bright kind of, seasonal affective disorder lights that, can basically match like the luminosity of natural light.
Okay.
This is exactly where I want to live. So I'm a little biased because I would love to pay $1,000 and like just have like a bed in like a coffin. the rest of my time.
I could set that up for you.
Just like leave it in an abandoned lot somewhere.
Yeah.
Uh, Yeah, I mean, so I'm a little biased. I will say, HM went after this hard, and I don't think I think they were wrong to do so. I think there's a lot of anti-billionaire dogma. I think there's a lot of people who didn't read the story completely, because this dorm that he designed, that's already built and in use, has like remarkably high reviews by the students who live there currently. Like, it's like well loved. The Windows thing, it does bother some people, but it has something like a 4.8 on whatever ranking website that people were bandying about in the comments. But then everyone in the comments was just like, my God, like all of these, like, in, you know, it's only got 2 points of ingress. Like, this whole thing's going to burn down and 4,500 like UC Santa Barbara students are going to die. It was like, well, everyone's just like, no, this got like fully approved. And also it's way smaller than most skyscrapers, which are like not fire hazards, are like famously safe and resistant to like fire danger. So it was a weird thing where I just, HN was kind of wrong in my opinion. I understand the concern about mental health of students and seasonal affective disorder. But by all accounts, this other dorm like has some of the best like student life and like community building, efforts. Like it's better than the other dorms in those terms, where there's like nice big common spaces that people actually spend time and like the experiment is largely successful. I don't know. It's interesting and like highly vitriolic, threat where everyone just came down unanimously against this thing. And, interesting tale.
Wow. Very interesting. I want to go check out the dorm now.
Me too. It looks like it's, in Ann Arbor. Okay. So I'm not sure which university
to have to
do. Okay, great. Yep. Checks out. Yeah, just to have total clarity, looks like it's got an 8.8 out of 10. So it's not a 5-star thing. But that is, according to this website, the adjective they choose for that number is great. And apparently it's got really nice amenities too, which is the other thing. You've got this tiny room, but you've got like a running track on the roof and a fitness center and all these common spaces. Basically, I'm jealous because I'm here looking at like, you know, crappy places that I might move to that cost like twice as much and have none of those amenities. And, you know, people just got to get used to the bed in a coffin life. You know, that's the future.
Yeah. Charlie Munger, what a guy.
What a guy.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the Facebook renames?
I mean, I've made my thoughts clear. I predicted this and I deserve all the credit. And I would like a trophy, please.
Okay.
Listen back to the other. So listen back.
You
play the tape.
You said the metaverse.
I did. I said okay. It would be funny if they called it the metaverse, something extremely on the nose. And okay. So it depends on how you parse the grammar. The metaverse, ... or something extremely on the nose. I didn't explicitly say an or, but you know, the kind of ... it's kind of like, you know, it's a generalization of the specific example that I mentioned. And I would say, this is extremely on the nose. That's what I would say.
All right. We'll give you the win on this one.
Excellent. I expect my trophy on my desk by Monday.
Yeah. You're the best reward actually you can give yourself is to log out of Facebook and then never sign back in.
And then the other thing is the new stock ticker, as my brother pointed out, is MVRS.
Oh my gosh, so much worse.
It's so much worse. It's really upsetting. Like you need the T. Like just having MVRS, there's no way not to read it as Movers. And it's like, oh, they're a moving company now? Just do MTVRS. And it's like, oh, that's nice. Are you allowed to have 5-character stock tickers?
Yeah, I think so. There are stock tickers that are even longer, so.
So I'm very displeased with this. I assume it was already taken or something, but like, man, FB, you know, say what you want about it, but FB is an iconic stock ticker.
I completely agree. The only good thing Facebook has ever done is pick a good stock ticker.